This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Melissa Idris with Julian Ng and Tan Chung Han this morning, 7:36 right now. Coming up in the next half an hour, news on Apple to start making iPhones in India, and back home, Bank Negara's outlook on the Malaysian economy. But first, let's start with news on the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank, the AIIB, which is led by China. Now, they are adding 13 new members, bringing the total number of members to 70 countries. The 30 new countries that have joined are Afghanistan, Armenia, Belgium, Canada, Ethiopia, Fiji, Hong Kong, Hungary, Ireland, Peru, Sudan, Timor-Leste, and Venezuela. Who's not in this list?
Well, good question right there. And the most notable absentees from this list, or at least those 70, once this 13 new countries have been approved, would be the US and Japan. Because very often the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank, AIIB, is seen as an alternative, right, to the US and Japan-led World Banks and etc. So, you know, the question here is, as we see more people jump on this AIIB bandwagon, question here is China really stepping up as a global leader, right? Especially when you see when Donald Trump's proposed budget, he's pulling back from foreign aid, you know, pulling back from globalization, really.
Yeah, I think China is certainly going to step up, and this is an extension of the kind of checkbook diplomacy that China has been undertaking over the last decade or so. And I think that the sign up of these people, of these countries, is a big win for China. I mean, we're talking about half the world signing up to this. This was a Facebook update. China would have 3 billion likes. So I think it's a big win for China.
That's a good way of putting it. I have to say, when we first started talking about the AIIB, I think Malaysia was one of the first few countries to kind of sign up for this. And when I believe the US was really lobbying not to have these countries other countries participate in AIIB.
Yeah, US was going around saying, don't like that status.
Yeah, don't like it.
Ah,
exactly. But then when the UK...
Emoji there.
But when the UK and Europe liked the AIIB initiative and joined on board, it became really hard for Japan to keep resisting it, because Japan is, you know, an ally in US's eyes. But how can Japan not join an Asian infrastructure bank?
Exactly.
They are
in Asia.
What
side are you on, Japan?
at least for the AIIB side, they have said the door is always open if Japan wants to join us, you know. So they are extending that olive branch of sorts. No, but then, say, when you look at the voting structure of the AIIB, though, it does, you know, perhaps give you pause or concern, once again, for the growing influence of China on the global stage. Because if you look at the numbers here, China has about 28% voting power. Okay, the next closest will be India at just 8% of the voting power. You know, so China has got, you know, about three and a half times.
Why is it disproportionate like that?
Well, it's not so much different from the way it is with the IMF as well. I mean, the US would have such an outsized voting power simply because they put more money into the system. And China here is also the main funder of the AIIB, so it's only natural that they have a higher degree of vote. But I think to get the buy-in of all these countries to come in, China would have to prove that they're fair to everybody.
Yeah, no, and it's a the purse is coming in at about $100 billion. But it's only been a year. Do you know this? It's only been a year since the AIIB has been around. They started in January 2016. And if you go to their website and you look at the kind of projects that are being approved, that have been approved or are being proposed, I mean, they basically span the globe, you know, and across industries, everything from Azerbaijan all the way to Indonesia, you know, from natural gas pipelines to you know, flood mitigation projects in the Philippines. So they are really, you know, on the ball here, and they are very, very proactive right now. So, you know, once again, you know, it goes back to this notion that it's not just talk, right? They are actually on the ground, putting money behind their words and actually investing into the infrastructure space across the region, which is, you know, very, very dire right now, as we can see in these other articles.
Yeah,
articles.
You got that Obo project going around, right? One Belt, One Road project in China.
Oh, is that what it's called, Obo?
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
Acronym for One Belt, One Road.
I think it is called One Belt, but maybe Julian made up the Obo acronym.
No, I didn't make it up. It's there.
This is a Friday Julian talking, emojis and Obo. Okay, yeah.
Yes, go ahead. And is this great big ambitious road that China is planning to build like across the road, across the world. Now, next time you are thinking of having that Cuti Cuti Malaysia, you know, you can have that Cuti Cuti Dunia, you know, driving around the world in this Obor Road. And Vietnam is a country that is benefiting a lot from this because they're spending heck of a lot of money on their infrastructure.
I mean, well, I mean, before I go to that, I mean, real quick, the infrastructure need across this whole region is just massive. According to the AIIB's perceived, I wouldn't say enemy, their counterparts,
rival.
Like rival, okay, fine.
Arch rival.
There we go. Asian Development Bank. So they estimate that the infrastructure needs in Asia will come up to 26 trillion. Trillion, okay, between now and 2030. So that spans transport networks, you know, power supply, water, etc. So 26 trillion bucks.
I can see venal politicians salivating there. 26 trillion bucks. How?
I can't even comprehend what kind of money that is.
I know.
So
it just
much
means
money.
Nothing.
So it's a lot of money, and you know, it also means that there's plenty of infrastructure needs. So AIIB actually plays a very crucial role in spurring the kind of spending. But yes, you know, going back to what Julian said, yes, you know, Vietnam's infrastructure needs. They have been spending massively. According to this Bloomberg article, they are second after China in terms of spending on infrastructure as a percent of GDP, coming up to about $480 billion in their needs between now and 2020. So a lot of spending that needs to be done.
Well, let's move away from Vietnam to India, where Apple will reportedly start assembling iPhones for the first time in the near future. So according to sources who spoke to the Wall Street Journal, Taiwanese contract manufacturer Wistron Corp is set to begin assembly of the iPhone 6 and iPhone 6S models in its plants in Bangalore.
All right. So this is essentially part of Prime Minister Narendra Modi's Make in India initiative. So the backdrop to this kind of move is this. The average iPhone has been basically priced above what the average Indian consumer can afford. So the idea is to try and bring that manufacturing into India, specifically Bangalore, to then hopefully lower that headline price and make iPhones more affordable for, you know, Indian customers. Also keeping in mind, you know, in staying with that macro context, say in the Asian space, you've got China, which has often been cited as the worst performing, you know, region
market,
for Apple in this part of the world, right? So, you know, if you are seeing limited growth there, why not try and tap into the next best thing, at least in terms of sheer size, India, right?
But also not just sheer size.
Yeah.
And it's a growing young population and very tech-savvy population.
Well, yes, that I think I agree with the tech-savvy one, but I'm not sure if the population of India would buy into a lot of iPhones because they still can't afford a lot of it. But the difference between India and China is that China has become a very expensive country, and China has, in fact, moved up the technological spectrum to provide more high-value-added stuff. But whereas India is currently in that sweet spot of cheap labor. So a lot of these tech companies and other manufacturing entities can set up there to produce cheaply, but it also has to be balanced out with India's notorious red tape and bureaucracy, and also the infrastructure build up in India that would help bring all this FDI in as well.
And that's a key point right there. Because of the red tape and bureaucracy that is so synonymous with the Indian ecosystem, so in fact, you've got the Prime Minister once again, who is loosening some of these foreign ownership limitations on Apple. I'll illustrate it with this. So Apple has been talking about setting up retail stores. I mean, did you know? I didn't know this. Apple does not have a direct retail store in India. So what they've been doing is they've been relying on...
I don't think they have one in Malaysia too.
Well, yeah, but I mean, India is massive though, right? But so they've been working on with resellers, right? Because essentially there's this cap where you got to have 30% of locally sourced goods, right? So now they're actually making an exception for Apple. So obviously there's a kind of demand and the market dynamics there that is good enough for both the authorities to relax their legislation or their rules, and also for Apple to, and also this Taiwanese company WinCorp, to then pump the kind of resources towards developing the Indian market. So, you know, that does make you wonder, you know, why can't they come to Malaysia?
Well, do you think the iPhones will be cheaper then if they're going to be making it in India where the cost of labor is cheaper?
Well, I mean, at least that is the, you know, initial
intention. It's either going to be cheaper or Apple going to be making more money because we know of people who would buy Apple products no matter what the price
is. Yes, we do.
But then, just to make sure we are absolutely clear, this is for the cheaper iPhone SE as well as the iPhone 6 and 6S. No word on whether they'll be making that highly anticipated iPhone 8.
Oh, yeah, the new one that's coming.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, we'll wait and see.
It's coming up to 7:46 right now. After this, we're going to take a look at the key points in Bank Negara's 2016 annual report. Stay tuned to The Morning Run on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.